Hello, you're listening to a spoiler-filled film conversation. Hooray!
Bloody bastards! East is east. That's what we're talking about this week. I am a deflated space hopper, Richard. Hello. With me is a scrubby, dirty parka coat, Abby.
I'll accept being a coat. I
A
expect none
parka
of the.
coat that may or may not be tarnished by smells. And with us is a unkosher sausage cooked secretly, Anthony Evans.
All right, guys. Yeah,
So yeah, it was Anthony's pick. He picked East is East, so he will be telling you who was in it and give you a little tiny little pricey, you know? So, Anthony.
just a little one. Yeah, East is East is a British comedy drama from 1999, written by Ayoub Khan Din and directed by Damien Donnell. The film is set in 1971 Lancashire and centered on the humor and tensions of a family headed by a Pakistani Muslim father and a white British mother. The film stars Om Puri, Linda Bassett, Jordan Routledge, Archie Panjabi, Emile Marwa, Chris Bisson, Jimmy Mistry, Raji James, Ian Aspinall, Leslie Nicole, Emma Rydal, and Ruth Jones. Big cast.
Is they all pretty much have probably been in British soap operas at some point.
Yes.
I love is it Jimmy Mistry? I love his name. He sounds like a magician. And Archie Punjabi sounds like a fake name as well. Like I don't know why. It just strikes me as false. Also, it's a very weird
Like a
lady's name.
fake stereotypical name, yeah.
Yeah. Or maybe just the translation for the Archie comics in India. Archie Punjabi. What scrapes is he going to get into this week in the comic? Anyway, I guess we should ask Anthony why East is East.
I just wanted to do like a kind of Asian-based British comedy because they're all really good, I found. So I give there was, I threw out a few choices for you all, and East is East came back, which I suppose is probably the most known British Asian film out there. And it's funny. And what strikes me about these British Asian comedy films is that they're the most British of the British films, if you know what I mean.
Because they're being about being British, they really amp it up.
Somehow, because it's British Asian, that makes it focus more on Britishness than any other film or something.
Yeah,
It's interesting because a lot of these films are about how Indian culture meets British culture. It means that they have a really refined view of what British culture is like, whereas in most British films, they just take it as read British culture.
Yes. And well, it's just a thoroughly kind of good film as well.
So
So.
it's just you're proud of it as a little film about Britishness, and you wanted to share. We wanted to, because none of us are Asian. We're all, Caucasian British people. And so, it's interesting to see how other. Because it's our culture and it's another culture, isn't it? It's that weird mix. Because Britain's basically a boiling. What's the. Not a boiling pot. That's. What's the mixing pot? What is the bloody term? What's the pot we're all
I
in
thought it was a
together?
boiling pot, a melting pot.
Melting pot, isn't it? We're a melting pot of cultures, really. And we've got a big Asian community. Not Asian Chinese and Japanese, but, Indian, Middle Eastern.
That's something that we should probably touch on for our international listeners, is that in Britain, when we say Asian, we mean India, Pakistan, that region of the world, as opposed to America, where they assume China. So
Yeah.
that's what we mean when we're talking about this. I was watching a speech by an actor, but I can't remember who it was. He was talking to Parliament and he was talking about how it's really difficult for Indian Asian to get for Indian Asian actors to get work in Britain, but it's even more difficult in America because they basically don't exist there. There's barely any population of it in America.
Well, they, again, America is like a bigger version of the UK in that it's, again, it's that a lot of areas are a big mixing pot. But yeah, you're right. I think it is. It's heavy on heavier on, you know, Asian, Chinese, Japanese people. And we still have them. We got a few Chinese people knocking around. Where else are we going to get Chinese food from? But, you know, we do have, like, big... There's lots of key areas, like Birmingham and... I suppose, in this case, it's, like, Lancashire. All the what's the place the dad in this film wants to live, like... He wants to live in a slightly different British town that has a bigger population of Muslims, doesn't he?
Bradford.
Bradford. So, supposedly, Bradford is a big Asian community, but whatever. So, Anthony, you presumably watched this at the time?
Yeah, more or less. I also remember studying it in, like, media studies. And, like, it's one of those, the kind of darlings of film studies when it comes to kind of British films, is this one.
Because it's good and it's about ethnics.
Mm. And it was the one that it made the breakthrough to the popular.
Mm. Oh, so much so it's even got a sequel.
Yes. Oh, yeah, I forgot about West is West.
I like the choice of name for a sequel, but having watched West is West, it doesn't do as, it's not as interesting. I don't know. It doesn't have all the family back, and it's kind of a little bit tonally different, but, you know, it's fine. Just East is East is the... I think it's at the top of the pyramid of the British ethnic-y totem pole. You know, it's that, it's one of the most famous and popular ones, to the point where I think they actually, like, it tours as plays very often, because it's quite a good little story. So
I think it started as a play, then it was a film.
Yeah, that's right.
So Abby, you're a media studies, film studies kind of person. Did you also study this?
Yeah, I studied it with Anthony. OMG.
Well, did you go? Hang on. I was in media studies, and I don't remember any of you mugs there. You were in film studies.
Yeah, we were in film.
So, get your own lives right, yeah?
This is one of our more enjoyable ones, actually, because the songs are really good, so we kept singing them all the time.
Yeah, that's a good jumping point, actually, because I'd seen this similar sort of feelings. It is a very good British film, so... I can't really say anything different. I had seen it before this week. The music that opens it up, I think it's like a song about a banner and flying it high and all this. Mm. The Banner Man, I think, something like that. And it's really like jolly and good. And it's got the first gag of the film, which is there's a Catholic parade coming through the terraced houses that in Lancashire. And the family from the film are part of it. They're holding up like various Jesus merchandise and chucking flower petals. And the dad, who is would frown upon his family doing this because he's a Muslim, is watching the parade, and they have to kind of peg it behind the alley where he is and catch up with the parade. And all the while, this music is playing, and it's really funny. And it's just the perfect setup to the scenario, because it explains the relationship they have with their dad. Mm. And, you know, it sets you in the environment, and it's funny.
I agree. This is why it always comes up in film studies, because it's a very tight film like that.
Yeah, it's really... It doesn't have any moments that aren't playing into the theme. Because even though it's a piece that you're meant to... I guess think about what is Britishness, what is being Muslim, you know, how did that play out in the 70s when it's set? That is the thinking point of the film. And even though, you know, it could be crowbarring in stuff without it being funny, but all the time it's really hilarious. And that is what makes it quality, I think.
Agreed.
Worried I'm reviewing it too early. We should really talk about it some more.
I'm worried it's going to be one of those ones where you just go, yeah, it's really good.
Mwah, isn't it? Well, you guys should be weighing in with all kinds of pretentious thoughts. What did you learn that the schmo who just watches it couldn't get?
Well, before we carry on, I'm going to have some problems talking about this because two of the actors involved don't have pictures on IMDb, so I'm not necessarily going to be able to tell you which way round they are.
Well, I can. Should we talk about the family members, and then you can like bookmark in your head who is who? Because there are seven children, so you know.
That's another thing as well. Like, even if they did have pictures, seven. Yeah. I'm not going to be able to remember.
There's two of them I do confuse, because there's the guy who they call Gandhi is a lot like the pathetic older brother, and even though they are clearly different characters, they are easily mixed up because they have similar traits. So I used to get them confused. I didn't this time because I've seen it enough times. But should we go from youngest to oldest, guys? Who is the young guy in the parka coat with socks and sandals? Ooh, what a choice.
Was that Nazir?
See, is my problem. He's one of the ones on IMDb who's got no picture.
I'm pretty sure it was Nazir. Oh, no, it was Sajid.
Sajid. Yeah, they basically spent all their time giving him a slap across the head and or shifting him from wherever he is. It's a really good running gag where he gets, no matter where he decides to be, he gets outed from his chair, seat, bed. Which is kind of the status of the youngest sibling, isn't it? That's their lot in life, is to be constantly booted and bullied. And then who's next? I guess it would be the girl next. She's still in comprehensive school, even though the actress is older. That's Archie Punjabi, isn't it? What's her character?
Her character name is Meena.
Meena, yeah. She's great. I kind of fancy her. Like, when it was 1999, so I would have been the right age appropriate to fancy a woman who's meant to be in comprehensive school. But that's just me.
Good to know.
She's hot. Still probably is. I don't know. I don't watch the dramas she's in anymore, but hey.
That she's in a series of The Good Wife. I can tell you that.
See, that's just, it's just not my thing, that.
So, I think she is.
But she's a really great character in this. She's very, very funny. She's probably my favourite of the family, actually. There's a bit when she's, like, the family like run and operate a chip shop, and as part of that, the kids are enlisted. A bit like in Bob's Burgers, they're enlisted to do menial tasks for the shop for free. And there's a great bit where there's, like, Bollywood music's playing, and she is dicking around in the backyard, like, sweeping and, like, pretending to be in a Bollywood film and kind of trying to make the boys laugh.
She does a really good job as well.
Yeah. It's pretty funny. That's my favourite bit, actually. I love that bit. That's probably when I fell in love with her. I went, oh, you are dreamy. Anyway.
Oh, cute.
Fuck off. Next up, would that be the art student guy?
That was Salim.
Right.
He was in a soap opera, definitely.
And he's the one who pans out to be gay?
No.
That's, see?
He's the one who makes the vagina.
What could be more hetero than making a vagina, Abby? You're getting all confused. He makes a sculpture of a vagina, which is nice and 70s and pink.
The one who is gay, he goes into fashion.
Oh, he's so the top one. You're jumping right ahead. The eldest.
Yeah, but that's why I get confused, is because artist into fashion designer. You know, it's not that big a jump.
Yeah, but I wouldn't expect him to make a vagina. Maybe a penis.
Wait, I'm going to remember his name. Yeah, he's no Jean-Paul Gaultier.
Well done. Right. And then we've got, who would be, there's a couple who are maybe similar in age, and it's the cool one and the lame. No, we got Gandhi, who I can't remember his real name, but they kind of bully as spectacled. The one who is more into being Muslim and a good boy. He wears glasses and a little hat occasionally, and they all call him Gandhi. I don't remember his character name.
I think it was Munir, that one.
Sure.
But we'd call him Gandhi for now.
Yeah. And then we got the two similar-ish in age, but you can't quite tell. One of them's a mechanic, and the other one's just a cool guy who's really like trendy 70s and has long hair, well, long-ish hair, and gets with the ladies. And they're kind of...
That's, Yeah, that's Tariq, and the other one is Abdul, I believe.
Yeah. But the mechanic-y one, I love the scene. I totally forgot it was in there. It caught me so by yes. surprise. Do you want to...
I know what you're going to say.
But there,
just... I don't know about you, but I remembered the film fairly well.
Yeah.
From watching it years ago, but there's the one scene right at the beginning that I'm like, what? How did I forget about that? And it's in the mechanics place, isn't it? They're doing a stag do for someone, and he's just kind of suspended, naked from a tire in the air.
Tarred and feathered as well. Like, it's not the character. Like, one of his garage colleagues, who is a big, pasty white man. Well, he's not pasty at the time. He's covered in chicken feathers. But they're all kind of... they're larking around because it's like someone's... Is his stag do or he's getting married or whatever it is. And they're like... Actually, the guy from The Orphans, the Scottish guy who carries a coffin on his own,
mm-hmm.
he's in it. And he's like, oh, come drinking with us. And it's like... And then the guy in the tyre who's tarred and feathers goes, you know he doesn't drink. it's all right. Like, he basically says it's all right. And it's so weird. how can you forget the most odd thing in the film? Like, totally caught me by surprise, as you say.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's because it's so underplayed.
Yeah.
And you can't peg it onto anything.
It's incidental. Doesn't... it's one of the few things that's incidental. But yeah, it still establishes... that he doesn't drink and that, you know, it's presumably his age or because he's a Muslim or something. And then later on he's having a pint because his life's getting all too serious. So it's kind of, it is relevant, I suppose. But yeah, and then we had the guy you've mentioned already, Abby, he changes his name, so we got another name to get. But it's basically the gay outcast of the family who... basically sets up the whole dilemma of the film by not getting married to the bride that his father has arranged him to marry. Like, they're having a traditional arranged Muslim wedding where you peel back the tinsel on your hat and get to see your future wife. Then you eat something and get married. That's what I gleaned. But, or you run away and go, sorry, Dad. Like, and cause great shame if you're a bullheaded 70s Muslim dad. What was his name?
I believe the last name we have is Nazir.
And he's also, in the later in the film, he's living a contemporary sexy life running a hat shop in London or somewhere with his slightly lame looking boyfriend who has a very lame moustache and thick curly hair and is only presumably... in it fractionally.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say, presumably it's his first boyfriend. So,
well, who knows? We don't get a lot of detail, but he doesn't want to get married because A, it's arranged, so that's a bit much, and B, you know, it could be because he's closeted, but you know, he's kind of a character that crops up a bit later. But he's kind of not. He doesn't exist for the first part because his dad is. Taken the picture down and said, like, he died because he's so ashamed at not getting forced married, which is kind of what the film focuses on a lot. It's the dilemma of being a British Pakistani Muslim who wants to have his sons all married off to other well-to-do Muslim families.
Yeah, and it's less about the actual practice of it, if you know what I mean. Like, I don't think they judge the actual, you know, practice of arranged marriages too much. It's more focused on, like, the dad's, like, obsession with looking good in the community kind of thing.
Yes, it's all about being Pakistani in Britain and what it means to kind of toe the line between being British and staying true to your roots and proud of who you are and what your culture is. And the weird dichotomy of being British Asian and just trying to be like British people and trying to be Muslim, and how it's just a strange, strange problem. And, you know, it's also the 70s, so it's like when racism was a bit more vivid and on everyone's mind.
And how he's got a little bit of a denial thing going on, where he has a white wife, but he wants all of his children to have traditional Muslim lives.
Yes. Massive hypocrite. Mm. That's big problem. Bad attitude. And then, as we find out later, smidge of a wife beater. Not good combo, is it? But he's still likable. That's the weird thing. Is even though he's a prick, and he's this, you could kind of, you should be able to relate to this scary dad figure, especially like when you're growing up and your dad is scary to you. It's even if they're nice, it's like it's very relatable, that idea of don't upset dad thing. You know, I think.
Yeah, I get you.
It's about all these things, and it kind of chugs along without deliberately making you think about it, but it does get your cogs turning.
Yes, and it throws in lots of very on the point humour as well.
Yeah, it's really bloody funny is what it is. This is something I didn't notice till this time round, and it's the there's a perfect metaphor for what the dad's thing is. Like, who he is illustrated perfectly by the fact that whenever they have tea, because British people, we all have tea all the time, and so it's like, do you want a cup of tea? And he always goes, I'll have half a cup. And having half a cup of tea is perfect, because he's half Pakistani, half British. His children are mixed race, I suppose. His wife's white. You know what I mean? Like, so having only half a cup of tea, though it's a common thing for, like, people to have. Like, my grandmother, who is white, non-Asian British, still, she had a half cup of tea. But it's, for me, that was just there subtly to be kind of, you know, a metaphor for who he is as a person.
Yeah. And yeah, you're right. Well spotted.
But it was only this time around, which is probably my, like, fourth time watching it ever. But that's who he is. He's half British, half Asian, and he's having a whole right old time of it and taking it out on his poor, suffering family, who are all adorable in their own horrible ways.
And what a performance by Om Puri.
Fucking hell, yeah. Oh, the scene I like as well about, like, when that makes you endeared to him rather than him, like, when he's hitting his wife, you're like, fucking hell, twat, and his kids, and getting all cross, and just saying bastard. The scene that's really great is he buys a barber's chair for the house, like, as a normal sitting chair, and tries to, like, impress his wife with it.
That is arguably the most British thing he does at any point. Is bring home a completely useless item. I'd be fucking proud.
It was really good deal. It was just like, and when he has a guest later, the, like, is it the Shah family or something? Like, anyway, there's a guest, and the father of the family sits in it, and he's like, is it high enough? And he, like, puts it up, and it just, the air going through it to heighten it, and the guy's being bumped about, but he also kind of likes it because he's a lame British Asian dad as well. Oh, like, all the time, it's not so much that British Asianness is funny, it's that just Britishness, everything about it is so British and
related. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I suppose it's a lot of it is just the humour and the relatable kind of nature of it. But it's a weird thing because I think Abby said, like, these, like, British Asian films tend to ask the question kind of like what it is to be British, and then because that, it kind of focuses on it more, and it just feels like a really British film.
It's very well observed. No matter what type of family you've got, if you're vaguely British or vaguely working middle class, there's going to be stuff where you, like, it doesn't even matter that it's the 70s. I didn't grow up in the 70s, and it felt like my sort of family. I didn't have six or seven brothers and sisters, but it still felt, everything felt relatable, despite having not lived that life. So I don't know how you do that, how you observe something, and yet it doesn't relate to you, yet it feels right.
I have a question. It's sort of not about the film, it's more about us. But
we're not Asian.
No, but there's a little gingy kid in it called Ernest. Yeah. And we created a little character called Smudged Ernest, and he was a little ginger with glasses, and I want to know if it relates.
Mere coincidence. It could have subconsciously been that we came across this smudge, I coloured it, drew a face on it, and we called it Smudge and Ernest. But he did, yeah, now that you, I did think, oh, he's ginger and glasses wearing and a little prat. Yeah, no, very niche point to bring up, Abby, but no, I think it was a coincidence. But while you've brought him up, one of the ways they deal with how white people are in Britain at this time is we have a few white characters as well. We got the girlfriend of the one of the middle sons who's cool.
Tariq.
Yeah. And her fat friend who they constantly belittle, ignore, or make fat jokes about. But she kind of deserves it for being such a bubblegum-chewing bitch. Not that chewing bubblegum does that.
Don't go away from Ernest, actually. I want to give props to one of my favourite jokes.
Go on.
And it's the one where he says, I can't remember the monetary value he says, but he says there's this guy who pays kids to kiss him, which isn't a joke. But then he says, for like £2. No, he'll give you £2 if you punch him in the balls.
Yeah. There's just this strange paedophile who's been tricking Ernest and the other gullible children to punch them in the dick. There is a weird scam that I think Ernest's granddad has come up with that is that he's told him, like, if you go get rat's tails, that you could sell them to make money or something. And then one of them just goes, no, I think that's made up. Like, I think your granddad's having a laugh, mate. And he is just this specky little nerd who really is A, in love with the girl from the family, and B, just wants to be in their life constantly, like that annoying little neighbour who doesn't stop calling around your house does. He's perfect. And for, he just ends up with scabs on his face one time without context. But again, it's kind of funny.
Yeah, they're all one family, aren't they? There's Ernest and then the girlfriend and then their grandfather.
Well, the chunky friend is not related, but yes. There's a family who lives across... Well, the granddad lives across the street from the family and he... is a big, is it BNP supporter? Who's that classic, the prick, the Rivers of Blood, big racist?
Enoch Powell.
Enoch Powell. He's a big Enoch Powell fan. And it's kind of, he's just there to be a laughable racist and have his window smashed in by a football for laughs. And just be a kind of contrast, just to highlight that, you know, it was a tricky time, innit, I suppose. And to provide relatives that are relevant to the plot, that's what he's for.
Yeah, it's a kind of a weird thing because they kind of, I don't want to say trivialise it, but it's not a big part of the story.
Everyone shrugs it off. It's not a war or anything.
Mm.
They kind of just ignore him and put up with it, not worried.
Also very British.
What's the thing? The ginger kid always is always trying to like get in with the family, so he's always saying like, "Is it salam alaikum? What is it? The like salam alaikum? I can't remember how to say it myself." But it's just a nice Muslim greeting that they exchange, and at the end,
uncle who's gripping onto the little guy's face, where he's saying, "Oh, why won't you say something to me?" It's like, "Oh, get off his face!" For fuck's sake.
Yeah, he really grabs his cheek as well. Not Ernest, the actual Indian... the actual Pakistani boy. Oh, God, what's his name? There's so many names. Old Parker kid.
Sajid.
Sajid. Sajid, he grabs his face. Oh, he's such an uncle as well. Just his crappy van that he takes them all to the cinema in. And the fact that he just parks on someone's space opera and bursts it and just... Oh. What an embarrassment that man is. But yeah, it feels like quite a lot of names, but it feels like a tight cast as well. I think the only other relative that turns up is another guy from like Coronation Street is the like an uncle
cousin?
Yeah.
Who owns the cinema, yeah.
How fucking annoying was it when the family go to the cinema in what was that Lancashire based town again?
Bradford.
So they go to a Bradford cinema that's playing Bollywood films or whatever. And they just, because the guy running it, the cinema is their cousin or whatever, he stops the film, or makes people stop the film, put on the film that the family want to watch. And there is this kind of, oh, when they stop, and then, hey, just because anything's on. And that really won't be. How do you guys feel about having the film switched, as if that's okay?
Well, it depends. Because if it's like a really small one, they might not have that many films in a week. And if someone's, like, because they're bored, they might go more than once. So if they weren't thinking, oh, I'll see this one again, and then they see one they haven't seen because of reasons, they'd be like, hey!
I suppose if they're watching The Exorcist 2 and they whap on the actual Exorcist, they'd be like, oh, thank God! So maybe it does.
Yeah, but how can we not be a little offended as film fans by that?
It could have been Exorcist 2, could have been Transformers. There's a short list of films that I'd rather not be watching.
Well, bad news, guys. My family are here, so we're going to stop reviewing Easter's East and start reviewing Mistress of the Spices. So, Mistress of the Spices, guys, got your popcorn ready? God, no, we're not doing that. Well, maybe one day. So, what does anyone want to talk about? Because we're not going to go beat by beat through the film. What points would you like to discuss?
Well, this is one of those movies that manages to get away with, I don't quite know what to call it, but it's the comedy of someone looking ugly. I'm not down with that because I think it's mean, but somehow in this, they own it and it's fine. I'm like talking about the two women that they try to matchmake them with.
Yes, it must be a weird casting day where you need two Muslim appearing women. Like, you just want Pakistani actors who look like the ugly sisters, but but can also pass as acceptable. Like, it's you have to look like your face is a joke. So that must be very hard to. You must have to ugly up a bit. Like, here, wear these unflattering 70s glasses, put on a particularly garish nose earring thing. But yeah, it is hard. How do you make that call? Sorry, you're too attractive to be an ugly woman that no one wants to marry.
I don't know. They didn't seem to do much. The glasses seemed to do a lot of the work. I don't know, back in the 70s, it was just a much bigger deal to have glasses, I suppose.
Their noses are a little, I don't know. They're not conventionally attractive, but they're not, you know, munters, really.
But that's the thing, I'm not usually down with that. But in this, it's a bit like, I think it's because they pitched it just right so that it is actually reasonable. They didn't crank it all the way around for like, grotesque.
Well,
it was just like, oh.
The comedy is all in the tension between, because essentially what's happened is the dad has decided his two eldest sons, who haven't abandoned him to be gay hat sellers, are going to get arranged marriages to another family of Pakistanis in Britain. And so they're all round at the house. There's this arrangement that they're meeting the potential new family and passing around photographs of the sons and the daughters and all this. And it's all the extended family in the room are waiting to see the reactions from the father figures. So it's all like the two sons sitting there looking depressed, the like friends and family who are sitting there going, is he going to say yes or no? And the slow burn on the dad's reaction as he's looking at going, fucking hell. Beautiful. Lovely. We're doing it, even though, you know, they're not thrilled. So it's not about these guys are hilariously ugly. It's that tension of how do you not say anything, you know?
Yeah.
So it is. But you're right, Abby. It's not like you to go for laughing at people's appearances. You're a nice person. Also, there's some comedy about a fat girl being raped by a dog.
The dog comes up twice for no real reason, and yet it seems to fit.
The massive, was it like a? It looks like a Dalmatian, but is much bigger. It's like a black and white spotty dog that also has its way with the mum of the family that they end up not liking in the end.
That's the thing. Like there was a giant dog on my street. He didn't particularly like sexually assault anyone, but he was very much. But he was very much. If he wanted to say hello to your face, that was, it was just happening. There was nothing you could do.
Yeah.
It was just like, there's a giant face in my face. How's it going? Please go away.
Yeah, I've had. Speaking of big dogs on your street. That makes it sound like I'm going to talk about rap or something. There was a big dog on my street called Butch, who was not so much Butch, but he was gangly and very. He would sort of try and he would stand up on his hind legs and be taller than me, and I'm quite tall anyway. And he would sort of gnaw my shoulders, which he thought was affectionate. I thought was terrifying, but as long as his giant lipstick stays away, I could cope with it. But some dogs are like horses, and this dog is horse-like in its size. And that's kind of the broader comedy, really, is dogs like trying to do whatever they want to women. Most of the comedy is just that family stuff, feuding families, brothers and sisters, slagging each other off, fighting over bacon and sausages. It's great. What I like is the whole all of the kids of this guy see themselves as British, don't want to be Pakistani in any way, and yet obviously to, you know, racists and the general accepted notion of Britishness, they are Pakistanis even though they've always lived in Britain. And I love that they all rebel against the dad's tyrannic rule by, you know, trying to cook sausages while he's out. What else do they do that's kind of shit? Dad, our dad's come in, like, and they have to, you know, pack up whatever they're doing.
Oh, there's a few things like I think they were just slacking off once.
Oh yeah, they don't like when the mosque van comes, they all like, shit, it's the mosque van, and they all like run away. One of the kids is an artist, and he's supposed to be an engineer in school. What else was there? There's just lots of little things, isn't there, that are just... Like, their dad is this massive buzzkill, because here he comes with his bloody Muslim traditions and watches with our names in, like, Arabic or whatever.
What I find interesting is that, it's particularly poignant in this film, but it's something that's common to cultures in general. In Britain, you very much don't want to be whatever your... sort of the culture you came with.
Like your parents. Whatever your parents are like, you don't want nothing to do with it.
But in America, they fetishize it. It's like, I'm Irish. It's like, you're not Irish. You haven't been Irish for four generations.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
So
about
we've got this sort of opposite thing, where in America, they want to be whatever it was that they came from. In Britain, we're just like, oh, British, would you sharp about it, yeah?
Well, I think what it stems from is across the British, well, across the British Isles, all school kids want to like get on with their friends and be like their mates, and so it's a common trope of Indian Pakistani families and stuff where they'll talk one way to their friends, like kind of try fitting in using street language, normal British regional accents, and then when they go home, it switches a hefty accent. I've had a few friends who are just, they'll be talking to you and they'll have, in my case, a Welsh accent, and it'll be blah 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 blah, and then it'll be like talking to their grandmother upstairs, like, and it'll just go super Indian or whatever, and it'll just and it'll just switch right back when they come talking to you again. And I think that's just very common. It's you want to fit in with your peers, not your crappy family, isn't it?
Of course.
Another thing that's I appreciate it this time round, right, is the little visual jokes. Like, part of the plot is about the littlest Parker-based child hasn't had his penis chopped because...
Circumcised.
Sorry. Sorry for not being up on what the technical term is for the Jewish and Muslim tradition of chopping off a bit of your foreskin. But yes, he hasn't been circumcised. He's having a peeing contest. He gets outed as a foreskin haver, and they have the operation. There's all kinds of little jokes in it, but the visual side of it is the art student has drawn a penis with the hood, and to annoy him, they tear the paper after he's had the operation where the head of the penis comes off. And there's also, when the dad is talking to his son who's pouting pre-op, they show like the... It's like a hole in the lavatory door.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you feel like it's suggesting the opening of a... Like, you go from the opening of a trousers to the door, the hole, and there's this constant implication of, oh, having your bits chopped. It's much subtler than I'm making it sound.
It's yeah, good, though, right? I like the humour surrounding that kind of whole joke theme in it. Like right down to, like, the it plays into the what you were saying about, like, the youngest child always kind of being pushed aside and, like, treated like they're still a child the most.
Yeah.
Specifically when the mum wants to, like, look at his bits and he's just like, no, like, what are you doing?
What I found is odd is the neighbour, the mum has a friend who's very similar to her, and she's just this classic white British tabard-wearing working class lady, and she's the one to be like, let me check, and like she's like, I wiped your bleeding ass before now, and it's like, I don't know, it's weird, you're like, your sort of friend auntie figure can't be checking out your junk, that's wrong. And yet it makes perfect sense, of course.
And at the same time, he was literally cornered, I think. Yeah. So one of them was seeing
someone
it,
is seeing his dick to check he's not, yeah. He has or hasn't got what he's supposed to. It's just...
Yeah, sorry, I just remembered what Anthony's mum calls it.
Wow. I
mean... What does he call it in this? Tickle tackle or something?
Yes.
Yes.
What does Anthony's mum refer to children's penises as?
Do you want to say it or shall I, Anthony?
Take it away, Abby.
Calls it a Willy Wonka.
Which is great. Oh, no one wants to go to the Willy Wonka chocolate factory, though.
Well, that's brought up another thing that I wanted to talk about, and that's the character of George, the father. And usually when, like, someone in a film is kind of playing a foreign person, they always kind of put on a really weird accent and use a weird language, which yeah. They think is like broken English, but it just sounds really weird. There's a really good balance that this guy gets in this one. I suppose it's also part doing the language, so the writing is really good as well.
Yeah.
But it's just really believable.
Yeah, the broken English and the emphasis on words like, I'm telling you, bastard, you do what I say in my house. You know, it's every phrase he has is just slightly wrong, but it doesn't feel off. It feels funny and correct.
It feels right, yeah, exactly. It just feels really authentic.
Mm. I like the way he calls his wife Mrs.
Yeah.
Which is...
You're right. Do what I found odd is all of the kids refer to their parents as my mam and my dad and stuff. And it's like, what do you... It's our... Sure, you're all siblings. Why would you say me dad is coming or, like, whatever? I get our kid saying our kid or our kid for people who speak proper. But not... Me dad. Like, what? Our dad, surely. I don't know.
These Lancastrians, Rich.
Flipping Lancastrians coming over here, being in our podcast. Yeah, it's weird, though.
I suppose we haven't really talked about the mum much.
No, she's great, so we really should.
Again, it's very, very typical, like, hard-nosed British lady.
She runs a fucking chip character. Shop.
Yeah. Yeah.
Chip shop.
There's a really fun, one of the funny lines that gives you a sense of the positive side of the relationship between the husband and wife is she says, I've been working in that chip shop for, you know, X number of years. And then George is like, I haven't seen much working. Smoking, talking. That's like, and it's just like, it's that back and forth slagging each other, husband and wife thing, which I think shows a genuine, like, affection and love. But they are affectionate. I mean, they have some really awkward, terrible sex at one point, but they have a very loving, oh, your kid, they have a believable relationship.
Yeah. Again, like, it feels very authentic. It's not in... it's not totally in love with each other, but it's, you know, they have their moments. I was watching this when we got to some of the more kind of physically violent bits. It felt like a companion piece to Once Were Warriors, except they've switched kind of like the drama and the comedy around.
What I think is the difference maker, right, is when you're dealing with spousal abuse, which is always hilarious, to have it be so that you don't hate, like to buy that she would stay with him. Usually in kitchen sink dramas, it's a fear. They're too frightened to leave, or they got Stockholm syndrome. In this, it's genuine love, and you can understand it. He's just an asshole occasionally, but he has enough charm to win over his wife, and they have enough affection, and she's strong enough as a person to tolerate him. And it's not like he's always abusive. It's just at the moment he's being a hard ass about it.
Yeah, it's obviously brought on by the failed marriage at the beginning.
Yeah, and because she's such a strong figure, you understand why they could be in love with each other, even though, you know, he's potentially a bit of a dickhead. So that, I think that's the difference. It's not a relationship of fear. It's a relationship of frustration, and just it's a very male dominant world. So, you know, it's part and parcel of who he is. But because you buy into their relationship, and they sow enough seeds to say, oh well, they would love each other, wouldn't they? And that's probably different to most spousal abuse things, because it always is Stockholm syndrome and I can never leave because of the kids bullshit, isn't it?
Yeah. There's also a sense of once violence has happened in a film, then the relationship is over by the end of the film, if you know what I mean? So this kind of plays against that.
It does. In fact, the whole film comes to a halt when, I guess, it reaches fever pitch. I don't know if that's the right phrase. Football metaphors, eh? It reaches a point where the father has had enough. His sons are rebelling against, you know, rightly. I mean, who the fuck wants to have an arranged marriage against? I mean, it's just, you can't have your dad forcing your life on you. And that's kind of what they're kicking against. And they're all trying to get on with being, you know, normal British people. Like, the sons are more interested in meeting girls and going to discos and dancing both well and lamely. And so, of course, you could, like, and they've already had one son who's ran away. So once the dad finds out that they've been breaking some of, like, he buys watches and the wedding garb, and like one of the cool son freaks out and smashes one of the watches. And when he finds out, he hits one of his sons who's trying, like Gandhi, who's trying to put them away. And he gets violent with the wife, and it just hits this point of the kids all want him to piss off, and they want their mum and them to fuck off and leave him. But it's not going to be that. Doesn't work like that. Usually, people either, like in films, they often, that has to be the end of it, is the split. But in this case, it's about getting past it, and actually, it's kind of the pivotal moment from this actress is when she has to stand up to him properly, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that one of the things that reminded me of Once Were Warriors as well was that kind of moment where you have the victim standing up for herself at the end. And yeah, just throughout, like, not just this scene, but like throughout, Linda Bassett is like given a really strong performance.
What was the straw? It was sort of the straw that broke the camel's back, because she's putting up with the family that's going to be marrying her sons while she wants to say no, we're not doing this, but she knows that that's what her husband wants. But what is the thing, like, because
I think it's just the kind of attitude of the other mother.
Yeah, she's a bit snooty and a bit like disrespectful. Yeah,
she insults one of the kids then when the vagina flies on her.
Oh, that's it. A big plastic, a big sculpture of a vagina sort of spoils everything. Because there's a tense...
Doesn't it always?
Yes. There's a big tense scene where they're all sitting around and they're discussing the finer points of what's going to happen after the daughters have married the sons. And who's going to live where, and it's all a bit, you're insulting, and all the, each, one by one, the younger kids are kind of going off it, like making tea, but then staying in a different room. They're all being forced to wear like traditional clothes, and they hate it because they, you know, they're normal kids, and they start fighting in the other room. The art guy comes back with his sculpture of a vagina that has been slowly being sculpted over the film. And there's a big old fight, and they all burst in the room, and a big old vagina lands in the lap of the mum. And that is the pubic straw that breaks the camel's back. And just shame, chaos, and then the big outburst from Bassett. She fucking steals the scene by putting everyone in their place and telling them all to piss off out of her house, and she's sick of them.
Any good British mum can, at the drop of a hat.
I don't think my mum has ever been cross and told someone to piss off in her life.
Yeah, maybe
I don't think they'd get as far as in my house. There was even the remotest chance that they were going to be like that. I'd be like,
Rack-a-muffins.
You're not even getting across the threshold. You fuck off now. There,
in fairness, my mum has never had a sculpture of a vagina land in her friend.
We'll have to arrange it soon. See what happens. I love the way the mum reacts to the vagina as well.
It's disgusted by it visually.
Yeah, it was something akin to, you dirty little bastard.
That's right. I also like that the little kid, all the way through, doesn't know what it is. There's another good joke right at the end as well, that it's said or implied that it is modelled on the fat friend of the, like, girlfriend of one of the boys, and it's just, oh, you said no one was going to see it. It's like, oh, she's a terrible comedy foil. Poor woman. But yeah,
that was Ruth Jones.
Was it?
Yeah. I thought I recognised her, like, watching it, but I had to look up, and it's like, oh my God, it was Ruth Jones.
Anthony, for the listeners, Ruth, what is she best known for?
I suppose she's most famous for kind of writing and starring in the sitcom Gavin and Stacey.
And she's very funny in that, in fairness. That's like that's the Welsh sitcom that every Welsh person, bar probably all of us, has seen.
Yeah.
It's so Welsh, I can't take it. I gave one episode, and their voices, they just done me in. It was like an echo chamber of just Welsh accents. It was intense. Too much. But it's a very popular sitcom, so fair play to it.
Yes.
Now, she's good in this. Well, everyone's
what
good.
What she has, like.
For getting raped by a dog and basically chewing bubblegum and being pissed off and being bribed with chips. But yes, that's it, really. She stands up for herself, Angela Bassett's mum character, and tells everyone to piss off, basically takes charge of her family a bit more. And luckily, one of the eldest sons is there to stop the dad getting violent again and, like, sort of stands down the dad. Whereas before, the younger sons couldn't, like, Gandhi couldn't. But I think he was playing a guy who wasn't old enough to really stop his dad clipping him and punching her and stuff.
Mm. I used to be meek as well.
Yes, he is. And he's one of the good boys who, like, is very Muslim, and so you can understand his character not sticking up for the mum a bit more. But yeah, luckily, you know, and there's lots of confrontations. All of the family, at one point or another, let the dad know you're being a dick, but the younger ones back down a bit quicker, whereas the higher up in the age they get, the more rebellious they are. We actually have quite a good scene where the cool kid and his brother and the girl all run off to London and meet the exiled. There we go. Thank you. Exiled son. They all go and visit him in London, don't they?
Yes. London.
And there's even a bit where they come back in a Rolls Royce and he's going to sort his dad out. And then the mum's like, no, go, you'll make it worse. And he's like, yes, I've remembered I'm a child again, and I'm going to be away.
That was a slightly odd bit. It's like, oh, I'm going to drive them back and cause some tension. Oh, I'm not going to make tension because it's going to make tension. Goodbye.
Yeah. there's a good bit where the boyfriend also, like, the guy ducks down in the car, but his boyfriend also ducks down and he's driving, so it just looks like there's a dog being chauffeured by ghosts leaving the street with all the kids screaming after the Rolls Royce. Because that's the other thing about the poor, which this film is slightly about. If a fancy car comes into the town, much like an ice cream van, you must all run out of your houses and chase it. Oh, this is a car that's expensive. Ah, let's hit it with sticks and scream.
It is a bit weird, though, that they didn't bring Nazir back. Because really, he's kind of the whole film focuses on, really. He's the one who's kind of sent his father off onto this spiral of forcing everyone to be really Muslim. And he's clearly got a problem with him. And it's just a shame that there isn't kind of some sort of resolution about that in the film.
Well, they have sort of awkward secret telephone calls to him in the rain in the film. Like, the mum and all of her kids come out and try and talk to him in a very funny, again, everything's bloody hilarious. But they have that, like, shared phone call, like, in the phone box to him and say all the usual stuff, and, you know, it's implied that he's moved on and is happy in his life, and because he's old enough, it's like the closure. He hasn't had closure with his dad, but he doesn't need it because he's living his own life how he wants now, so he doesn't need to resolve it. The rest of the family just need to not go through it the same way, isn't it? So I can understand why they didn't have it be the big focus.
No, it's true. I mean, there's a lot of characters in it, and you can't, you know, it's. I suppose it's pointless pushing aside a minor character for one of the main ones. It's just, it seems to play such a role in the psyche of the father. I don't know, it was a shame there wasn't more resolution.
It does make it more realistic, though, because in a situation like that, if there's something particularly traumatic and literally leaves home, then they're not going to want to revisit that necessarily.
All right, guys, I'm trying to find a flaw, and I can't do it.
No, I won't let you.
Well, the film ends with not much resolution, because the dad, who is back down and is in the bad books with everyone, he basically goes to sit in the chippy, and the mum who's put him in his place and whatnot, basically just, you know, she doesn't leave him. She just comes back to the chip shop, and in a very British way, it's settled with, do you want a cup of tea? Half a cup. And it's implied that they're going to be all right. Yes, the dad isn't utterly going to be changed, but he's accepting that he can't just force his children to marry into a Pakistani life. They have to kind of, basically, the end infers that everything is going to be back to normal and the lesson is slightly learnt, but nothing is hugely changed. It's just the family isn't torn apart by it. It's just half a cup of tea. It'll be all right. Like, you know.
I do like that the ending's not ambiguous exactly, but it's a work in progress, as all things should be when you're dealing with actual people with emotions and shit.
Yeah.
So I do really like that. I think that's what really works for this film, is that it's realistic in the way that it handles people and the way people are. And that ties into it really well.
I think what's a good achievement is it's very real. You invest in them as characters and people. They're very believable, and yet it's constantly funny. Like, it's got actual jokes and bits that are kind of... bits that are deliberately, this is a joke, this is a funny bit, this is a funny scene. But the dialogue, the interactions, they walk perfectly between that's how people are and it's funny as a comedy. Like, without deliberately writing jokes, it's hilarious. It's like a really good piece of observational comedy. Bloody hell, Anthony, where are the flaws in this thing?
I don't know. Honestly, I wasn't expecting it to be so kind of perfect, but I can't really find much wrong with it either.
I think perfect is the wrong word, but it is so fundamentally solid that any flaws that it does have are so sort of petty and trivial that it's really not worth thinking about.
Yeah, I think, you know, you could really pull it apart and be mean, but overall it does exactly what it's supposed to. It entertains you. It's a nostalgic piece about British culture. And it's just a funny film about a family, a dysfunctional family. And maybe you could go, well, the dad's accent's a bit hokey at times. maybe you could criticise the, I presume, quite a lot of old actors playing younger, but they're quite convincing. Anything is just little things that you can't, no one's going to be worrying about.
We're also the wrong audience to really be able to analyse the minutiae of being an Asian family. It's like, well, what were we going to say? My experience isn't like that. It's like, no shit, it's not.
A lot of the time, I think it has a huge, not that we're Catholic, but it has lots of parallels to strict Catholic families. And probably the Jewish families as well, I would have thought. So it's just that strict religious upbringing. It's kind of universal. If you've got religion in your family and it's strict dickish religion rules, then I think that will broaden the relatability. Obviously, we're British, so we can relate to this. Maybe on a bigger international scale, people will be like, I don't know what they're saying. I don't know why do they live in a tiny brick shithole? What is going on? Why do they all... Like, they talk weird because they're both Pakistani and British. Like, so maybe there's a lot of difficult barriers for people who are from very different parts of the world, but... There's a lot of universal truths to it, so I don't know. We can't be other people and judge it, so not a lot we could do about it as a review.
So from three Welsh people, it's a thumbs up.
So you know what? I don't like the title. It doesn't mean anything. I get it's trying to say in the east of England, it's also the Middle East because Pakistan in like East England. Like I get that, but it's a shit. It doesn't mean anything. East is east. What?
It's from a poem by Rudyard Kipling, is it?
A classic East, Indian, British guy. East is East
and West is West and never the twain shall meet. So it's
unless
kind of...
they do meet and then they make a funny film about it.
Yes.
So it's clever and references poetry.
Mm.
Still don't like it.
There you go. That's the problem with the film. What a crap title.
Yeah.
I like it. I have a metaphor.
Go on.
For the film. It's like... I don't want to be like stereotypical, but I'm going to relate it to curry.
Wow. Racist.
It's like it's the best curry in England.
Chicken tikka masala?
But an English curry isn't a real curry. It's a British curry, but it's still the best British curry.
Yeah, it hasn't got that actually... In the Middle East curry thing, it's the pinnacle of how the British do foreign cuisine. I get you. It's that perfect blend of.
It's like this isn't right. This is something totally different and unique to like the British Isles, but it's good.
Yeah, you know, sometimes you got great cuisine, you bring it over to Scotland, and someone goes, "We can tikka that masala," and everyone goes, "Yeah, that was a good idea. Well done, Scotland." Thank you. India will be taking that back as well. good metaphor. Abby, do you have anything that can top Anthony's clever one?
In the film The Birdcage, they have this joke about bowls that look like just your sort of your classical standard bone china. You know, the white with the blue... on it.
Oh yeah, I know what you mean.
But upon closer inspection, you realise that there's gay men having sex on them.
Yes.
But you don't realise until you look at it closely. But it actually makes it more endearing and interesting because before you just thought it was one of those fucking shitty white bowls with the blue stuff on it, and then you realise no, this is much more interesting and strange. Why does this bowl exist? Mm. And that's what this film's like. On the surface, you'd think that there wasn't much to it because it's just going to be another one of those British films where everyone's poor, everyone's a bit shit, you know? Just,
yes.
But no,
kitchen it's actually, sink drama without any levity.
But no, it's actually got a humour to it and the content has a lot of mileage in it. There's the divide between Britain and India and the way that it comes together, it's got great flavour to it, if you insist. But,
I see. Smutty, but good. Yeah. Surprising.
I thought, yeah, it also had vaginas, so you know.
It's eating your soup down to the vagina. Good, I think that works. I'm liking both metaphors anyway. I am struggling to think of what it's like for myself, because basically we're all trying to find good metaphors to basically say we like the film and stuff. So something I like, I don't know, it's like being at a family friend's. For me, the film is like being, I'm Ernest and I am in the family. I'm enjoying someone else's family. I can relate to it, but I am a guest in that world because it's not quite like my life. But it feels right. I feel like the family friend, maybe the woman who, the mum's friend who comes around and is always having a cigarette and getting in their business, and she doesn't overstay her welcome, but she's very much a part of the family as well. I feel like I'm her, and this is like a family that isn't mine, but it feels funny and like mine anyway. And all of the anger and feuding also happens in family, so it's got that raw, fucking families are annoying, but they're also wonderful and funny. So it's kind of just like a big family meetup, and you're technically not a family member. So for me, that's how it is. It's relatable without being a replica of my life.
It's like the family reunion, but you're like the neighbour of the person and you're just kind of poking your head around the door kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm in my tabard, smoking a ciggy, just sticking my ear round the door and, you know, sticking my head round and having a natter and enjoying the atmosphere and leaving before it gets too violent. Or something. Yeah, it's a good film. I mean, we've made it clear we all liked it to begin with, so it was just nice to natter about the finer points. Maybe people who've watched it will be like, oh God, yeah, I never noticed that. Or they'll be like, I thought that as well. Which, whatever you feel, however the listener felt or will feel about it upon watching it, I hope we've hashed out some stuff that was enjoyable to listen to. If not, don't fucking listen again, yeah? If you're going to be a negative Nancy. We don't need people who don't fucking want to listen. That would be torture for them.
Also, don't forget to check out other British Asian cinema, because it's usually pretty good.
Yeah, support it. Yeah, because you need butts in seats to keep making them, innit? Yeah, give it a try. Be up for culture. That's what this film tells you, really, is don't be a fucking prejudiced dick voting what would now be UKIP or Trump. Be accepting of others, you fucking spesh. Liberal thoughts and kisses, mwah, 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 accept people. Different cultures are lovely.
Hooray. You got issues, man.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bye, everyone.
Bye!
I love that noise the kid makes when he sees the penis being torn on a piece of paper. It's just like, oh, the suffering. Oh, horrible. Anyway, yeah, bye.
Glory, glory, glory.
The banana man is a banana man.